Welcome to Healthcare Crossroads, a podcast showcasing the connections we make in healthcare data, compliance, and patient care. We are at a crossroads in healthcare. Let's make an impact by bringing together physicians, nurses, healthcare information management professionals, and legal experts in healthcare. Everyone in healthcare intersects. Let's find out how. This is Healthcare Crossroads. Here is your host, Jennifer McNamara.
Hello and welcome to the Healthcare Crossroads podcast. My name is Jennifer McNamara and I am your host. I'm back again to talk to you and dig deep into the world of healthcare, discussing compliance, data, and patient care. Today, I have a very special guest on the show today, a remarkable guest who will take us on a captivating journey through the ups and downs of our healthcare system. Dr. Henry Buchwald is a renowned physician, researcher, and observer of healthcare, and he is joining us today to talk about his thought-provoking book that is out now, Healthcare Upside Down. He will give us a unique perspective from an extensive experience that he's had witnessing the transformation of healthcare over the past 5 decades. And in his book, he paints a vivid picture of our healthcare system and how far it has strayed from its primary mission of caring for patients. So I really encourage you to stay tuned for this amazing episode to come. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsors and have a quick break. The barriers for practices and patients due to prior authorizations are a clinical and clerical issue. I want to thank OncoSpark for designing a platform that streamlines and standardizes the authorization process. This optimizes staff and resources while decreasing the time a patient must wait. The platform will seamlessly integrate with your practice management system and electronic medical record, alerting you to expiring authorizations or order changes. Off-parency reports can be used for internal development as well as payer and pharma accountability. Direct insurance verification and specialty pharmacy hub enrollment are standard modules in the platform too. So jump on over to offparency.com. That's www.authparency.com and get started today with this amazing tool. Well, as mentioned, I have a very exciting guest on the show today. I have Dr. Henry Buchwald. We're here to talk about his book, Healthcare Upside Down, A Critical Examination of Policy and Practice. Now, as mentioned, Henry is a world-renowned surgeon. He's an author, professor, and patient healthcare advocate that we can turn to answer our questions about this broken healthcare system that we have. So welcome to the show, Henry.
My pleasure to be here.
We are so happy to have you. And so like we normally do with a lot of our guests, our listeners are used to me asking this question. Can you give us a brief synopsis of your career in healthcare, how you got started? Of course, I know you have a wealth of knowledge in this industry. Give us a little brief overview of your background.
Well, I grew up in New York City and most of my schooling was there to start with. Went to the Bronx High School of Science and then Columbia College and Columbia Medical School and internship at Columbia Presbyterian. Then I was in the Air Force for a few years. I was scheduled to be there and I enjoyed that time. I was stationed at SAC headquarters, Strategic Air Command headquarters in Omaha, which was a very exciting time in our history. From there, I went to the University of Minnesota, finished my residency, and stayed there, went through the ranks to professor and became the chair of experimental surgery, named after the great Owen Wangenstein. And my work has been in surgery, being a clinician, being a researcher, and being a health advocate. And certainly from all the years of my experience, I came to write this book, Healthcare Upside Down, because I'm so frustrated, unhappy, what's happening to healthcare in our nation and how we as a nation of patients, we're all patients sooner or later, are being treated. We're being treated second rate for a first rate cost.
I completely get what you're saying. And I think we're all feeling that. No matter what area we work in, as we're all, like you said, patients, and a lot of us here that are listening to this podcast are in the healthcare industry. So we're seeing firsthand a lot of the things that we're going to talk about today. And so the first question I was going to kind of shoot at you, you know, we talk a lot about the doctor-patient relationship, and we've seen it deteriorate. So what is your opinion? What has kind of led to that? And why are we seeing that so much of it these days?
Well, what has led to it is that healthcare today is done on a business model. And it's not focused on the patient. It's focused on the business. And therefore, as Orwell pointed out in his book, 1984, language precedes actuality. So in order to make the patient happy with this transformation, or not happy, but accepted, the wording has changed. The patient is no longer called a patient. He's called a client. Now that's a business term. The doctor is called a provider. And all doctors, almost all doctors today, are employees. They're not independent. They're working for an administration. So that's the business model. It's providers looking after clients for the firm. We no longer talk of a hospital or a clinic setting. It becomes a firm. And to get people to accept this terminology gets them to accept the business model. And, you know, I can give a few anecdotes that will sort of show it. And anecdotes always give a nice example. Let's say a good anecdote. When I was a medical student, as a third year medical student, and my wife had the flu. And I just happened to mention that on rounds. And 8 o'clock that evening, there was a knock on our door. And there was Dr. Pereira, a most noted cardiologist, hypertensive expert, professor of medicine, with his little medical bag. And to come to our door, we lived on a fifth floor walk-up. And he said, I heard your wife has a cold. I want to make sure she doesn't have pneumonia. I'm here to examine her with your permission. So that was the atmosphere in the past.
Oh, and, yes.
Well, how has it changed? I mean, I can give personal anecdotes. Mm-hmm. One of my daughters doted on her gynecologist obstetrician when she had her third pregnancy. And yet that person didn't deliver her. Person was 100 yards away in the clinic. And she said, am I going to see her? Am I going to see? No, she didn't come over. It wasn't her day in the hospital. So she didn't come over. Another relative had a hip replacement. The surgeon didn't come out and say hello at the beginning. Didn't say hello to the relatives. Didn't say hello to anybody except when the patient was leaving, because he was needed in the operating room to make more money for the firm. So a personal example, I've been riding horses all my life. And I never was thrown, but in 2016, I was thrown. I had 11 broken ribs and a displaced lung. I was a mess. And I was in a hospital, and this was a private hospital, and my care in a unit and then in the rehabilitation was good and bad. Rehabilitation was excellent, was run by a old-fashioned doctor, but in the intensive care unit, it was run by hospitalists. And I got nothing against them personally, but I never had a doctor. Every day, a new person would walk in and said, how are you? And I would mumble something, and they would say, oh, hey, good. Never saw him again. I never had a doctor. So I never had a doctor-patient relationship. So that's how the world has changed. And in my own life, I must have done 10,000 operations in my lifetime. And I always saw my patient preoperatively. Not only in clinic, but the day of surgery, I saw the patient and the relatives. And then we went to the operating room. And when the patient was still sort of under anesthesia, I went out to see the relatives. And then I saw the patient. And then before I went home, no matter what the time, I made rounds, saw the patient again. That was my life. And when I was home and something might have gone wrong, I got a phone call at 2 a.m. And if necessary, I came into the hospital. But in my later years of practice, no, the hospitalist took over. So I was told in the morning what had happened. And so there was the fracturing of that relationship, the relationship based on the patient saying, my doctor. No, what's that mean? It means you trust this person, but you can't trust a robot and you can't trust the interchangeable doctors. And that's what's happened. And the doctor would say, my patient. That's not a sign of possession. It's a sign of accepting responsibility. And doctors today don't. They are interchangeable because they fit into the business model. And so if you call to try to make a date with your, quote, doctor, first of all, you speak to a robot. Then you speak to an interrogator. And they say, why are you calling? And of course, what's your insurance? And so on and so on. And then you say, I've got an urgent call from my doctor. And says, well, doctor so or provider so-and-so can't see you for 2 months, but you can see so-and-so in a week. Now, what's that mean? Mm-hmm. It means that the one you wanted to see has a lot of patients. And the one who you are assigned to has open slots. So that's how you fill the business model. And so that's what's happening. The least concern is, what does the patient want? Because the patient is now a client.
Exactly. And, you know, let's talk about what patients want. We know what they complain about. I know what I complain about as a patient, the long waits in the waiting room. You know, for so many years, I was a receptionist when I first started in healthcare. I worked in many medical practices. I was the one to answer the phone, made the appointments. Then I got into coding and prior authorizations, and I worked my way up to management. So I've kind of been in every role on the business side myself, working alongside physicians like yourself. But I've seen that, and I've heard the complaints, and, you know, sometimes we think, okay, well, we're doing the best we can on our side to make this work for patients, but ultimately it's above our heads. Like we're fulfilling the role that has been assigned to us by, like what you said, the business model. So we think about these long wait times. How has this kind of shifted? Again, we've talked about this, but what do patients really need? And do you have any thoughts for the future on how to be more efficient in this manner?
You know, in my book, Healthcare Upside Down, and you could find it reviewed on my website, which is easy. It's all one word, small letters, drhenrybuchwald.com. I go through all the chapters giving facts and statistics. And in the world statistics, we are way, way down. We are superseded by essentially every Western European country, New Zealand, Australia, and our neighbor Canada. We have lower life expectancy. We have a lower mortality, with a higher mortality from bad diseases. We do worse in cardiovascular disease. We have a low percentage of being seen by a physician. But basically, they're all in that book. And they're easy to read. They're on tables, and you can see we are way down on the list. Yet we're number one in cost. And now you say, how can we remedy it? The public health system in this country has to represent public health. And the medical schools where it all starts. And we all support medical schools, not only through individual tuition of the doctors to be, but through tax dollars, state and federal. And they have to take a lead and say, this is what we're going to do to make medicine work. And then the clinics, the hospitals, all these areas have to speak up. We have social research today. It has to show what there is out there. We have so much philanthropy in this country in healthcare. A lot of it goes to overseas, which is good. But philanthropy to study the bad healthcare in this study in this country would be a wonderful thing. So we don't have anybody who is doing this. And then there is, of course, the media, podcast. But it all ends up with one thing, everyone. You just can't leave this to someone. It's got to be everyone. And people always say government and politicians. There are very few people in government and politicians who are doctors. There are a lot of lawyers, but they're not doctors. But they're all patients. And they got to look at themselves as patients and see what they want as a patient. And so there are ways to fix this, but people have to become aware. And so I think I've written in a couple of places in the book that the American public is being cheated, because they yes. wouldn't do this in any other venue. I mean, for instance, they wouldn't buy a car under these terms. And if you wanted to take your kid to a ball game and you called up and for tickets and they say, oh yeah, we'll sell you some expensive tickets, but we won't tell you when you can go and what team will be playing and where you will be seated. You wouldn't go to the ball game. And Americans wouldn't accept, if we look ourselves now, if we look at the way they want to look at us, the administrators of healthcare, as consumers, we wouldn't as consumers accept what we're being offered.
And you're 100% correct.
And so I'm just trying to point these things out. I sort of view myself like the little boy in The Emperor Who Has No Clothes by Hans Christian Andersen. And, you know, the emperor is marching along. They're holding this invisible train and he's naked. And this little boy says, the emperor has no clothes. And then I'm hoping out of the populace, what it says in the book, and I always love the language, it says, hear him, hear him. I hope people says, hear me, and do something about it.
Exactly, right? We're all trying to scream as loud as we can to tell everyone what's happening. You know, one of the things that you mentioned in the book that I think we're all just really talking about a lot these days is the difference in, you know, it's out there and, you know, we don't want to be afraid to talk about it, is the privileged versus underprivileged communities in the healthcare system and how things are, you know, happening with those communities. What would you like to talk about in that area that you think our listeners could benefit from?
You know, the statistics that I give in the first chapter are global, and they compare United States against Canada or other countries. But if we look within our own country, if we look at the life expectancy of white Caucasians, it's higher than Native Americans, higher than African Americans, higher than Hispanics. So within our own spectrum of being disadvantaged, certain groups have less money, and if they have less money, they have less access. There's so many disabled in this country. They cannot go to the doctors. They don't have the advantage, or they're not understood. Or doctors don't take the time and patience with somebody who is aphasic and can't speak. So within our own poor statistics, there are even poorer statistics.
I very much agree. You know, there's so much to unpack in your book, and I get so excited when I think about all the gems in there. So kind of just kind of to wrap up our conversation, I have a couple more ideas that I want to kind of, you know, talk about. You know, you have already mentioned about, you know, how the administration works, and we understand that doctors these days are not running healthcare systems. Basically, what are some examples of how they do control the physicians that are in there? And what are some of the things that you've seen over the years that show that control?
Well, hospital systems have predicated what drugs can be used. Maybe not based on efficacy, but based on cost. And hospital systems have predicated sometimes what operations can be done, because some take more time and effort and so on. In other words, instead of a individual physician expert making some sort of decision in concert with the patient, what's available is dictated. And certainly the time is dictated. You hear so much of, well, I need a hip replacement, but I can't get it for so many years, or I need this, and I'm on a waiting list, because the emphasis is not on what the patient needs at this time, but what is good for the business model. There's so many examples of how this works. The doctor is rationed in time. You go to a clinic and they say, our 15 minutes are almost up. The time with the patient should be as long as needed, not 15 minutes, but it's part of the business model. Also, you spend so little time with the physician now in a clinic, because you see, as I said, even to get in, you have to speak to a couple of robots, and then you have a nurse, and then maybe you say, Dr. So-and-so, I can't see you today, but this nurse practitioner will see you. Some of our nurse practitioners are superb. You wanted to see a doctor. Healthcare should not be a commodity. It should be a right.
Like understood. Yes, absolutely. No, I 100% agree. And finally, I wanted to touch on this topic that you mentioned, the good and the bad healthcare, measuring that, because, you know, we all want good healthcare. We don't want bad healthcare. But how do you actually measure that? So I know there are probably some statistics in your book, but give us some insights into how we can measure that. How do you think we should measure that?
The statistics compare our life expectancy against the life expectancy wherever, in Finland or whatever. But how does the individual feel they're getting good or bad health care? That's a very tough question, because the individual patient is so reliant on the health care that's being given. But I think if you have the feeling that you're getting information that may be contradictory with the last health care provider that you saw, if you feel that the health care provider is there today but gone tomorrow, interchangeable. If you question what has been asked of you to do in terms of taking a drug or having a procedure, but you haven't been given time to explain why, if you haven't been made part of a decision process, those are all signs. I don't think this is so hard. I mean, we make these decisions every day. We make the decisions about driving a car. You know, we say, I don't like the brakes on this car. I don't like this. I don't like that. Or this is very good. And we make decisions about food. Well, healthcare shouldn't be so tough either. It should be closer to the heart and the mind to say, I don't like the healthcare I'm getting. It's not what I want. It's certainly not personal. I'm just a cog in somebody else's machine.
You know, I agree with so much, and I'm so excited to introduce this episode to our audience, because I feel all of those listening out there are really going to enjoy reading your book and really digging deep, and you give so many insights. So I want to thank you, Dr. Buchwald, for coming on the show today. And we'll go ahead and put your information in our show notes. But is there anything you want to share with our audience, where else we can find you?
Well, they could find me on the website. I think that's the easiest way to find me, drhenrybuchwald.com, all little letters. And you'll find things about me in the website. And you could find things about me on Wikipedia and looking up various things in Google and so on. I'm not important in this. I'm the messenger. What's important is the message. And what's important is that people realize what the message is and say, I can do something about it, maybe not as a person, but as a single person, but I can do it through my fraternal organizations. I'll speak to my union, I'll speak to my hospital, etc. As long as we tolerate this, it's going to go on. And I don't think we should tolerate this, because it's, I think healthcare is a given right. It's not a privilege, it's a given right. And in a society that we pride ourselves we are, we should have that given right. You know, we always like to be number one. Well, I would like this to be number one in healthcare. I don't want to see us have the statistics of countries that don't have our resources, but do mm-hmm.
You are 100% correct. So thank you for coming on the show today. We're very excited to continue this conversation through the pages of your book, to turn healthcare right side up again and focus on patients, like you said, because that's what we're all here to do, is to help patients. It's what we do, and it's what healthcare is intended for. So thank you again for coming on the show. I want to thank all of our listeners out there for listening in once again to the Healthcare Crossroads podcast. I want to thank our sponsors over at OncoSpark and our amazing podcast producer, Gabriel Fass with Highland Productions. Until next time.
Thank you to our sponsors at OncoSpark. OncoSpark is a technology-enabled revenue cycle management company. They help you effectively manage claims data with technology solutions. Check out their website to learn more at www.oncospark.com. Thank you, OncoSpark.